afternoon, everybody. We are pleased to have with us the how do you describe yourself, Damian Kulash? I mean, I want to say creative genius. I want to say OK Go. I want to say artist. I want to say voice about net neutrality. I want to say father of twins. But what would you say?
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Yeah, I'm the singer in a rock band called OK Go, and I direct our videos. And because of that weird trajectory, I have gotten to do a bunch of other fun idea chasing. But when I sit next to someone on an airplane and they say, "What do you do?" I always say, "I'm a musician," and then I feel like I'm lying.
That's an interesting. Yeah. So let's go there for a second, because that elevator pitch. And I think when you start to evolve creatively, people do pigeonhole you into one category or another, and it may be hard for them to see you or take you serious on the business side or on a net neutrality issue or anything else. How do you craft that story so that people like understand it and it's well vetted?
I think it's a balance between idealism and pragmatism, because basically, like, it's very pragmatic for us to have categories that we all understand. So we're working on a lot of education right now. So I'll use education as the metaphor here, that there's a reason we understand math as 2 + 2 = 4, and physics as when you drop something, it hits the ground at a certain rate, and so forth. Like, you need to learn these things because there's basic tools, but the world isn't actually divided out into math here, physics there, art right there. Those are arbitrary distinctions we make so that we can actually parse the world around us as humans. And it's the same for art and for creativity and for business and for innovation and for whatever. It's that we like to know what a musician is, but in 1880, a musician was a very different thing than after the recording industry.
That was also a bad year for us.
So. Yeah, innovation, terrible that year. So, you know, for most of the 20th century, a musician was somebody whose job was primarily to produce plastic discs that people took home and listened to. And that changed again recently, and what musicians were is, you know, becoming more diffuse again. And I don't think we've really reorganized our categories in the new digital era. Everybody makes ones and zeros now, whether you're a journalist or a comedian or a filmmaker or a musician. All four of those and many, many others used the same few channels for distribution. So if your song, like if the biggest music streaming platform on the planet is YouTube, then your song will have a video whether or not you like it. It
yes.
could be a blank screen, or it could be the cover of your album. But every musician is de facto a filmmaker now. You know, there are problems with this. Like, for instance, we can't tell the difference between somebody who's joking about the news and telling the news
right.
or lying about the news.
Yes.
But there are also good sides to it, which is that some of us who like pushing the boundaries of the things we work in don't have arbitrary boundaries set for us.
Now, speaking of YouTube, that's a great place to go. You know, starting off with This Too Shall Pass, which now has 61 million views. The second viral video on YouTube, if I remember correctly, yes? Yes?
I can't parse that question yes. exactly, but yes.
It's true. No, yeah.
Okay.
But then 45 million, 30 million, all these videos that you created and directed, there's a little bit of my personal infatuation with the one take, process. But what is your first step? Because I think every time your audience is expecting you to deliver that same caliber. So is there pressure? And then what is your process for starting the creative, journey on each project?
Wow. I suppose there is pressure, but no more than there is with anything else. I mean, most of the pressure is internal. Let's put it that way. The stuff we do tends... The first thing we had go viral was an accident. It was the year before YouTube started. We released we had a ridiculous dance routine that we did on stage. It was 2005 or 2004, and the music scene was very much split into hipsters who listened to The Strokes and like a pop radio people who listened to it was most like rap metal at the time, and we were neither, but But when we played rock and roll shows, we would mostly get the former category. So we get these hipsters who would shuffle their feet and smoke cigarettes and look cool. And we figured the best way to actually break that mold was to drop our instruments and break into a ridiculous boy band dance. So we had this ridiculous boy band dance. We shot a practice tape in my backyard. And the resulting clip was just amusing to us, and we sent it to some friends online. Someone posted it on a site called iFilm.com.
Anyone remember iFilm?
It was a precursor to YouTube. Yeah. Wow. We realized like a month or two later that it had been downloaded several hundred thousand times, which was like as many records as we had sold in 3 years. So so we stumbled across this canvas, basically. We did not think of it as a music video. It was sort of just like, well, now we have all these nerd fans online, because at the time, like, anybody watching video online was probably in the IT department. And so we started making things just as a sort of gift to that part of our community. And it was that sort of developed into a new kind of artistic category for us of challenging ourselves to make things that fit that space.
Right.
So it was, so back to your question. Sorry, I know I went really off there. So we have been figuring out what we're doing as we do it the whole time. At first it was sort of like, well, we don't want to do another dance exactly. So how do you change, how do you change dance? Well, we'll try doing it on a moving surface. So that was our treadmill video. That was the same year that YouTube started. That that went surprisingly viral, and we suddenly had the music industry was suddenly paying attention, and suddenly there was a category around this. Oh, we're making online music videos. That's a thing now.
Yep.
So as we've been doing it, we have the only sort of core thing is like if we just did that, we don't really feel like doing it again.
Right.
And so the challenge mostly comes from within ourselves, and we mostly keep on pressing up against logistical barriers at this point.
Is there a challenge as a brand? Because you mentioned your airplane conversations where it's like, I'm a musician. And I think at the core, if you make shitty songs, nobody cares if the video is good or not. So how do you make sure that
some of our detractors would say otherwise? But I get back to the idealism versus pragmatism thing. That as a kid, I spent most of my time drawing and doing visual art. In my teenage years, I got more into music, and by the time I was in my 20s, I had like my getting out of college, I had a part-time job as a radio engineer and a part-time job as a graphic designer. And those things were always kind of living side by side. And the idea that I could do these, like, that it seemed in the late 90s that one of these would be a job and the other one would be a pastime. And I don't think I really had a sense of the fact that they could merge into, that you could actually just chase creative ideas and your toolbox could grow to encompass a variety of things that sort of work outside of categories. That is the idealism version.
Right.
Pragmatically, you have to realize that there's like ways that things get distributed in the universe, and you have to like ride the line between something being understandable enough for people to grasp onto it and being exciting enough to be changing what those categories are.
Yeah, and absolutely. I think, you know, a lot of brands face that problem of like, how do we extend our creative portfolio without alienating, you know, our core audience? So I want to kind of segue into the project you've done with Mercedes, because that is an example of that, right? How do we create something that's exciting, that celebrates a product? You know, can you walk us through SIT, S-I-T?
Yeah, there is a EQ was doing a series of profiles of game changers, I believe it was the category. And I was very honored that they contacted me about that. And they were like, so can we film you doing what you do? And I was like, well, you mean sitting at home tending to my babies? And and they're like, no, like, you know, we're interested in you as a filmmaker or as a director. And so what are you directing next? And I was, we don't have a video we're working on right now. And
the phone call's over.
Yeah, exactly. So
nothing,
thanks. And they said, well, what would you like to make? And it was an opportunity to sort of go, okay, well, this is a place where we know, we specifically know that there's no category for this, or hopefully there is no category. And the worst case scenario is, oh, we're going to make a branded thing. You know, that we're like the one thing we don't want to make is something that feels like like advertising that's been crammed into the box of content, you know, right. capital C, so that please, please really look at this thing because you're going to like it. It's an ad, you know, and so and the brand is super great about that. They were just like, no, the reason we're doing this. These profiles, because what we want to do is celebrate the creativity and celebrate the sort of the edges of ideas. And so it's like, well, then let's not make something that has a specific category already. Let's make something like, let's not make a video. Let's not make a song. Let's make an artwork. We'll just start with artwork. And what would the theme be? You know, what is EQ about? What is it that crosses over between? I kind of hate saying my brand because it feels gross, but between my personal brand or OK Go's brand and EQ's brand, that I mean, the greatest thing about EQ is it's an electric car. It makes the world like that. That's just good for the world.
Absolutely.
So it gives you a pretty nice brief. Like, if you just go, what's an artwork that makes the world a better place? That's a really fun place to start. And it just went from there.
And so you walk into a box.
Oh yeah, okay. So the machine itself, I forgot to describe.
That's okay. No,
awesome. So the machine itself is we had sort of settled on the idea. They were like, "What about a happiness transform? What about a happiness engine? Because like we make these electric engines. What about a happiness engine?" And I am sort of a sarcastic person, and I was just like, "That basically a happiness engine is like the most wrong thing for the current times we live in. Because look at how." Uniquely unhappy everybody seems to be.
Super thoughtful, yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, you know, I would love for people to be happy, but we have, like, you look, just pick any first world country and all of them seem to be in, like, you know, like something horrible is happening. So how do you get happiness out of that, or how do you hold on to happiness during that? So the idea was then maybe what we do is instead of like trying to force happiness on people, give people a way to get rid of unhappiness. You know, just be like, what if we got for positivity in like in this time, the one thing we would all love to do is divest ourselves of all of this anxiety, like whether or not it's about the politics in your country or look, I'm not going to go into all the dark things in the world. We all
there's
know
enough.
What
they are, right? Read a Twitter feed.
Yeah. But so how you it. Can we? How can you celebrate joy in a time that when that's so without being tone deaf? You know, like you don't want to like in the middle of this time be like everybody's happy. You know, and so the purpose of the box is. It's just like an electric car. We are trying to take something. We're trying to make good in the world out of a natural resource. This time, it just happens to be your stress. So you go into this box. You jump around. There are transformers all over the floor that collect your kinetic energy. There's 600 specially designed transducers on the wall to collect the sound energy of you screaming, and we have a battery collecting all that you have released. So it's a stress inversion transformer.
How much energy has it collected so far?
So far, it's about 300,000 joules. So that's in the 2 days it's been running here. Joule is a watt is a joule per second. So most of us think in watts because that's what we're used to.
That's watts we're used to.
Right. So
thank you. Thank you. Sorry.
I'm ashamed.
There's a bunch of groans on top of it too. They laughed, but then the rest of them were groans, and it threw you way off. I apologize.
Well, so 300,000 watts is that's a lot of energy.
Absolutely.
And in truth, I mean, obviously, there's a sort of tongue-in-cheek nature to it. Like, we don't actually think that people are people's stress is going to power the next generation of automobiles, for instance. But
You might be onto something. Like that's, you know, I think that is one of those things where it's this ability to transform literally energy into something positive. And I think it makes a pretty bold statement as to what you can do at home, right?
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, I thought about this early in the process and then got into the specifics and sort of forgot about it. But that people rarely are given the given the opportunity and the inducement to really just go bananas, like the people who've been going into the machine, I kind of thought we'd get like reserve. Like the point of the machine in this context was to try to break down the barrier of people being sophisticatedly removed from everything around them. You know, like here we are at South by Southwest where we kind of inspect what everybody else has been doing, you know, and like, and it is very successful from that perspective, because you go in this box, it's like the lights go crazy. It's like a little personal rave. There are cameras seeing you. So from the outside, we can watch you go crazy, but we can't hear you because it's perfectly soundproofed. And you have like this little space to just lose your shit. And, and people, no one has not done so. Like, no one has gone inside and been like, ah, okay, it works, cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody kind of starts, ah, and then the lights start going and they see, like, how much energy they're making, because there's VU meters showing you how much your feet are generating and how much your voice is generating. And there's a little bit of competitive humanness, because you see what the high score from today.
I can outrage you.
Exactly, I can outrage you. And everybody like comes out of there smiling and out of breath and have like, it's, I just didn't really think about how most people don't have a place. I have a soundproof room in my home because I'm a musician, so I have a recording studio. Most people don't have a place they can go and just scream. And I believe it or not, people really need that.
No, absolutely. If you had to identify a purpose of your career up to now, right? Because I think that this is a really grand goal. But is that it? Is that kind
this
of an example?
It. This was
of
it. Thing? This one box.
Yeah.
I had a person who worked with me for years who kept on asking me, "What's your 5-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? What's your 10-year plan? What's your 2-year plan?" And unfortunately, like, this is a very honest answer, but a very hard one to act on, is like, in 5 years, I want to be doing something that I could not have predicted today. That like, I want to be, I want to stay challenged. I want to stay engaged. I want to stay not bored. I want to be proud of the things I'm making. I want to be connecting, connecting things creatively. Like, I already know that as a person in my early 40s, I don't have a PhD in something. I'm not going to be the world's greatest in any one vertical of something, but I know a lot about, know a little about a lot of things, and really, really enjoy the creativity of looking at this system and going, wait, if you can solve this problem in waste disposal, that's actually, that like, that would allow us to do something with a video platform. You know, like, right. There's the broad strokes of connecting dots across things is really exciting to me, and really really rewarding when it happens. So it's a very like abstract goal.
As you're accomplishing these micro goals, especially, I mean, there's a team that you work with. There are other members of the band, and obviously, you know, people who assist you in different ways. What's your idea of teamwork inside the work that you do? Because I think it's very different than, you know, a startup per se.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm not.
Is it?
I don't know. I mean, I don't have a lot of startup experience, but I certainly, you know, I spend a lot of time in these sorts of environments where people are connecting entrepreneurial creativity and energy to more traditional forms of like people, you know, music and art. And it seems like there's a lot of cross-pollination and a lot of the same ideas apply. We have a much less rigorous business structure and generally much smaller bank accounts, but I think the core principles of collaboration and management still kind of apply. That,
right.
Because of the type of work we make, or I make, collaboration is a necessity. Like, there's never anything where I'm like, oh, I can do all of this myself. You know, even from the musical perspective, there's always the rest of the band.
Right.
But from the perspective of this particular project, the stress inversion transformer, I know the physics principles behind how you get sound pressure waves to turn into electricity. I know the physics principles.
We all do.
But I mean, you do in the sense that if you had high school physics, you know that there's energy in this, and that energy is essentially fungible, and you can get energy from this form into that form, and you don't know how efficient it'll be, or exactly what the machine is, or even who to call to figure that out. But the creativity, or rather the kind of collaboration, largely comes in finding those people and working out the right flow of ideas, because you need to be, you need everybody in the team to be aware that that the best idea in the room will win, and that that's not personal, and then that's not ego driven, so that there's a very even kind of lateral flatness to the program, but you also need to have a sense of where the buck stops and how decisions get made, which is very, very vertical. So it, from what I can, from my own experience, at least, the best way to work in those situations is to find smart people and let them know that their ideas are being heard, and that their ideas are often better than yours, but that when they're not, there's, it's nothing personal, but we're not going to use that idea, and get everybody free of the kind of,
no, like the,
it's mine,
the,
it's yours.
The ideation space is definitely like a thick-skinned room. That's where you make the mistakes. That's where you say the dumb things. It's like the safe space for everybody to have a democratized conversation. And like, we're all here to create the best idea possible. So that's,
yeah. And if you have a fairly clear definition of where you're headed, whether or not that's a abstract thing like we need to have engaged this many people in this way, or we need a box that turns this type of energy into that type of energy. As long as you have a way of measuring your progress, because it's usually that's like in music, for instance, that's the hardest thing is what is your metric? Like, is this, I like the way it sounds this way, you like the way it sounds that way. Like, how do you figure it out? You know? Exactly.
Duke it out. Yeah. So after South By, will we have a chance to experience the Transformer?
I believe so. It is. It has been designed such that it can be taken all around the world. So it's that the steel box that it is in goes directly on a forklift, and I'm not sure where it's next. Do you know where it goes next? Oslo and Berlin.
All right. There's field trip.
Luckily, there is no stress there.
That's true. Very true.
So I mean, they probably don't need it, but
I think we have time for a few questions. Are we good for questions? Or yeah, okay. Who wants to ask Damien a question? We have a little bit of time. Yes, okay.
I just want to say thanks for Upside Down and Inside Out. I watched that video like a lot, and then read about how y'all put it together, and it was just amazing. So just thanks.
Oh, thank you. That's a great question. I appreciate that. Thank you.
One of the things that struck me is that you said that in certain moments, more people are watching your video than actually bought your records. So how do you make a living?
I have no idea. The business model for my band and myself has been the roadrunner off the cliff. Just keep, do not look down, just keep running, you know? We are lucky to have found ourselves in a place where we have like carved out this very strange little niche of stuff that works online against the normal grain. The normal grain right now is make a content channel that spits out very low production material all day long. You know, that like get as many pieces up of you, you know, like unpacking that product or complaining. You know, our stuff is like each piece takes 6 months or a year to make, and we put out something every year or two. It's like it's very long in between, but they strike a chord in a very different way. It's not a business model that many people could follow, but it does mean that we usually can find partners to work with to make these big art projects. We are, you know, our shows sell well. Our records do sell well. We just, they're free is always better, and there's a lot of that online. I work as a commercial director, and I'm working on a feature film right now. And I spend so little time thinking about what my accountant does, but I do know that I can keep paying the rent, so that's all right.
You talked about how obviously your creativity doesn't fit into any one vertical. And I'm wondering if you have a creative role model who's also kind of a Renaissance person.
There's a few people who I thought of very specifically, especially early in our career. Ira Glass from This American Life was a big, he was a big player in our career because he, I was an engineer at NPR in Chicago, and so he asked us to be his backing band for their first live tour, and I got a lot of advice from him at that time. But even before I really knew him, it was the idea that something could be both accessible and smart, and that something could live within very very established boundaries and still not feel like the other things within those boundaries. I think some of the best journalism I've ever heard is long form stuff that This American Life did, especially around the Iraq War and around the economy. And those are stories that just like are almost impossible to tell because they're so god awfully boring in most contexts, and because they're long form, and there's very few places where that works. But they're able to make things that are both incredibly emotional and accessible and intelligent. And I liked the fact that that was a big one. I would say McSweeney's and the whole Dave Eggers universe. Seeing somebody puts things together that are, again, accessible and intelligent, but also multifaceted and not, they're sort of about Dave Eggers, but they're sort of not, like, you kind of know this is involved and he's teaching kids how to write in this place. But that thing does not say Dave Eggers on it. It says, it says the pirate store, you know. And what's that? Oh, really? Okay. Oh, wow. In terms of specifically musicians and filmmakers, there are specific aesthetics and specific pieces that I love here and there, but it's mostly, it's like, I grew up listening to Prince, and he was inhuman and too great, and I never wanted to play music because I listened to Prince. I just wanted to listen to Prince. It was when I started listening to the Pixies and Fugazi, and I was like, oh, it's just as emotive, but it's because it's broken, and it's because I can hear a real human struggling with that instrument rather than like a superhero doing something I don't understand, you know. And that sense of sort of embracing the weaknesses, and just if you see something, try it. And if you get good at expressing yourself or get good at being critical about your about the emotional reality of the thing you're making. I know that sounds really, really fruity, but if you can have a sense of self-reflection and that you develop as a real skill to be like, is this thing that I'm making working, causing the emotions that I want it to cause? That's very different than do my fingers play the guitar the right way, or do I have all the right film skills? And so Pixies are a perfect example of that, where their music is super super broken, they're not very good at those instruments, and it's very very powerful, you know. And you know that that's a honed skill, and that was a big influence on me.
And speaking of very powerful, thank you. This has been a very powerful session. Damian Kulash, I'm Chris Denson.
Thanks, everyone.
Innovation Crush.